Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Good morning. Welcome to the Book Show, All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to have your company. Thank you very much. This is the time of the month when we get together and talk about what's great to read, what's coming out. And there's a lot of local interest we're going to talk about in this program with book festivals and an indie bookstore crawl this weekend. Let me introduce first my panel. Chris Hickey is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library. Chris, among the things that Chris gives us are the quick picks. Those are the books that everybody wants to read. And as I said in the intro, Chris will tell us how to skip the line of the hot books. Brian Lohr is the owner of Cover to Cover Books for Kids in Upper Arlington. Always has wonderful selections of books for the kids in your life. And Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog, for important to anybody who loves to read, is thelongestchapter.com. So, because it's this weekend, I want to start with the Columbus Indie Bookstore Crawl. I almost said brawl. I didn't. A bookstore crawl. And Brian Lohr, can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. It's such a fun event. And this year is brand new. We're extending it over 2 days. So we have it both Saturday and Sunday, 20 different bookstores all throughout the central Ohio area. And what participants get in regards to the Indie Bookstore Crawl is there's this crawl card, and our guests here have a crawl card. And if you visit 7 different stores and turn that crawl card in at the 7th store, or maybe the 20th, maybe you visited all 20 over the 2 days, you will be entered to win a fantastic literary prize. Cover to Cover has put in a $50 gift card. There are other prizes from all the other stores as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a blast.
I would think you can visit an indie bookstore in your neighborhood and get a card for the weekend.
That's right.
The crawl is this weekend, April 25th and 26th. And just reading some of the bookstores available, Cover to Cover, of course, Clintonville Books, Storyline Bookshop in Upper Arlington, Gramercy Books, The Little Gay Bookshop. I looked at this, and what really impressed me is with indie bookstores, there are so many of them now. Mm-hmm. If you had done this card 5 years ago, maybe there would have been two titles, you and somebody else. That would have been it.
That's absolutely right. So there's a wide variety for every genre, every taste. People are going to have a lot of fun with this.
$2 Radio, they've been on the show. That's a wonderful shop. That's over on Parsons Avenue. So if you're looking to get out and about this weekend and you are a book person and you like this show, then you will love the Columbus Indie Bookstore Crawl. Just find the indie bookstore closest to you, get the card there, and be on your way. There's also prizes. Brian Lohr, while I have your attention, perhaps you could recommend a book for the kids in people's lives.
Absolutely, I'd love to. There is a new one just out here about a week. It's called 102. It's illustrated and authored by Matthew Cordell. He's a Caldecott-winning author and illustrator. And in this one, it's just a fantastical journey. A little boy named George, he shrinks, he goes into a whole nother world, and 102 keeps on coming up and up again and again. It ties so wonderfully together at the end when he's all grown up. You're not sure if it was a real story or not. Spoiler alert, it is. And it just has this beautiful aura of something like Marie Sendak or Chris Van Allsburg from the 90s. The illustrations are all done in ballpoint pen. Different colors are layered on top of one another. So there's no AI at all in this, no artificial intelligence. It's just this pure imagination of Matthew Cordell and his art. It's really beautiful.
It's called 102. What's the age range for this book?
Yeah, so age ranges are basically 3 and up.
What are the age ranges at Cover to Cover, your shop at Upper Arlington?
Yeah, so we go from newborn up to 18 and a little
What is a newborn reading, Brian?
Well, yes,
help me out here.
Yeah, so there are books like Tummy Time books where they're on their tummies and it spreads out like an accordion. They're durable and they can look at high contrast books and begin to develop their eyes. So yeah, anywhere from newborn up through, like I said, 18, sometimes beyond. We have some books by, for example, Hanif Adurraki, because he's local and we like to support him as well.
Brian Lohr is the owner of Cover to Cover Books in Upper Arlington, Books for Kids. And he has also been telling us about the Columbus Indie Bookstore Crawl. I want to make sure people know. Is there a website they can find out information about this?
So you can go to any of the indie bookstores' website, including ours. So that would be covertocoverchildrensbooks.com.
Okay, go there and you can find out all about the Indie Bookstore Crawl this weekend here in Columbus. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the book show on 89.7 NPR News. Okay, Chris Hickey, you came in and said this is the hot book.
Okay,
this is the hot book.
This is the hot book. All right, so this morning I looked on the hold shelf and there are over 1,000 print holds and over 1,500 digital holds. I am talking about Yesteryear by Claire Burke. This is her first novel. She has a podcast called Diabolical Lies, and she admittedly says she is obsessed with Trodwives. So Trodwives, let me explain what that is. Trodwife influencers. So these are women, they're the wives' mothers, they might have a higher number of children, and they profess to live like an olden days kind of life. They bake their own bread, things of that nature, and they put it all for public consumption on social media. And these women have millions of followers.
These are women who don't have jobs outside the home.
Right.
But they work in the home.
They are CEOs of their brands.
Right. Okay.
So they are absolutely working. So they're
I mean,
it's kind of fake. So this, let me just, to set the stage for this book, let me read a portion. And she says, "Who was I? A flawless Christian woman, the manic pixie American dream girl of this nation's deepest, darkest fantasies, the mother every woman wanted to be and the wife every man wanted to come home to. Like a nun in a porno, it didn't make sense, but also by God, it worked. My name is Natalie Heller Mills, and I was perfect at being alive." So, let's talk about this book. So, she goes back in time to 1850 somehow and is forced to live the life that she is professing to live. And of course, none of it is real. She doesn't even know how to make bread. So this takes place in three time periods: the current time, previous time when she was meeting her husband and before they purchased the farm, and then this, however she ends up in 1850 and living this life. So when they buy this farm, Yesteryear Farm, she's just posting some, you know, random sweet photos on Instagram. And her husband, Caleb, becomes obsessed with what's known as the Manosphere. And that's just kind of a collection of podcasts that are hyper-masculine, women shouldn't vote, those kinds of things. And he
you can't even say that with a straight face.
I know. Well, okay. So one day Caleb says to her, "They're talking about you on this podcast." And so she hears one of these podcasters say, "This woman, she is the perfect woman. She is the woman I want to come home to because she looks so beautiful and so exhausted." And so that just blows up her social media. She becomes viral. Yesteryear Farms becomes just a whole brand. So we go through these different time periods. So in the 1800s, it's like her husband is old and the house is run down and she doesn't recognize any of her children. So, you know, is it a hoax? Is it time travel? You're not going to know until you know. And the twist is very interesting. And so close to the beginning of the book, her oldest, who's 12 years old, Clementine, says, "I don't want to be in the videos anymore." And that puts her empire at risk. And that starts our journey. And it is fascinating. So what is this book? It's part social commentary, it's part thriller, and there's some really good horror writing in here. So it's dark.
I have to tell you, I'd not heard of the podcast, and I'm wondering, is the podcast that hot that it would generate such attention to the novel, or Or is the novel just that good and it's getting...
The novel is just that good. I mean, I do think that this is a novel that has been... has a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
Right.
I do think it lives up to the hype. It's a page-turner, and it'll just make you think a lot of thoughts. The characters are unlikable for the most part, but her storytelling is so good that I found myself being sympathetic to them at different moments in the book.
You've
so her
said
storytelling
about
is
a thousand holds on it.
Yes, so basically put it on hold. This can be a summer read for you. That might be when you get it.
Summer
or you could find a quick
book. Maybe not this summer, but
yeah.
So my question would be to clarify what a quick book is in case you can walk in maybe and find it.
So if you walk into one of our locations, chances are you might find a copy and you can take it and check it out, and you're essentially skipping the line, and then you get to read it and tell everybody about it.
It's called Yesteryear.
Yesteryear. The author is Carol Claire Burke.
A recommendation from Chris Hickey, the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library, who brings us the top quick pick right now here in the library system. And Cassie Rose is here. I don't think Cassie's going to be reading. I don't know.
I'm not.
I got the stink eye from you as you were talking about
that. I've been very aware of it, and I know that it's getting huge publicity, especially for a debut author. So she's very lucky.
All right.
Yes. So you're looking for a recommendation for me?
I am, yes.
Well, I'm going to take us to the Middle Ages. I'm going to take us to Scotland in 852. And I'm going to tell you, it's a funny book. I'm going to tell you to kind of think of Monty Python. Mm. But at the same time, there's a little bit of savageness in it, but it's bearable because I don't like a lot of violence. So it starts with some Norsemen who are approaching the island of Eye. And I should give the title of the book. It's called The Book of Eye, and it's by David Gregg.
Spell Eye.
Eye as in the pronoun I.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. So this boat of Norsemen is approaching the island of Eye, which is like the island of Iona in the Hebrides off Scotland. And of course, they are Vikings. They are going to plunder and pillage and massacre. And as I got to about page two, I just started laughing because of the list of names of these Vikings, which I wish I could say some of them on the air, but I'm not allowed to.
Okay.
So we're going to leave it at that, but they're hilarious. Anyway, they get to the island. The island is primarily of a monastery, and the abbot is absolutely thrilled to see them because they're going to be able to be martyred and go on to their heavenly being. And the farmers, however, are ready to fight. So to give you a little bit to prepare, you have a little bit of the, quote, savageness. So the head, Helgi Cleanshirt, who is the leader of the Vikings. You learned about Helgi Dirty Shirt later in the book. Anyway, so he's after the abbot, and he's not getting the information out of him of where this priceless object that he wants. So he brings in the ponies to... it is a great book. It's very funny. And he ties the ponies to his arms and to his legs to, break him apart. Anyway, so they leave, and there's this horrible massacre. The Kingsmen come in from the island, and they take the survivors off, but three people remain, and that is Brother Martin, who is going to save the monastery. There is Una, whose husband was killed. She's thrilled, and she wants to run the farm. And then there is Grimmer, the Viking that all of his fellow Vikings thought was dead, and they buried him, but he's not dead. So with that one, I would say think of not Monty Python, think of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but he's not a vampire. So think of this in the middle of the book is, you have a widow, you have a monk, and you have a Viking. It sounds like the beginning of a joke. But you get these three people that come together, and actually the Viking doesn't want to be a Viking anymore, and he is getting close with Brother Martin. Also, he falls in love with Una. And Brother Martin does do very well with the monastery and praying the hours. And it's really an enjoyable book. David Gregg is a playwright. So that gives you an idea of the language that is going to be, how he can do the one-liners, I'm not going to say that part of it. Because it is really funny how Brother Martin survived. but I'll leave it to you. Anyway, they know the Vikings are going to come back, so there is this spectacular, very good and funny ending.
It's called The Book of I. We'll leave it there.
Yes.
Okay?
And yes.
By the author one more time.
It's David Gregg.
And I know that our friend Chris Hickey always makes our titles available online. So if you're missing it like I do half the time, and I'm sitting here, I depend on Chris Hickey's information. This is All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show. We're going to take a quick break and come on back. So don't go away.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose, WOAC's book critic, Brian Lohr, the owner of Cover to Cover Books for Kids, and Chris Hickey from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Library. Let's talk for a minute, Chris Hickey. Before you give us another recommendation of a quick pick, let's talk Book Festival. When is the Columbus Book Festival?
Book Festival, it will be July 11th and 12th. And this week, we announced our headliners. So very exciting. So we have Kimberly Williams Crenshaw. We have horror writer Paul Tremblay. Thriller writer Laura Dave. We have historic fiction Lisa C. And then one of my favorite authors, T.J. Clune. So T.J. Clune will actually be in town next week. His new book comes out on the 28th, and Westerville Library is bringing him in, but it is sold out. So if you're missing that, you can see him at the Columbus Book Festival.
The book festival is at the downtown library.
It is at the downtown library.
In the building and on the grounds.
In the building and on the grounds. There is no cost to you to get in. You will need to get tickets for some things, but there's not a cost to those tickets.
And there's a lot of people there and a lot going on. If you're a book person, this is your weekend.
It's so much fun. And this is our fourth year. And we have an amazing team that just works tirelessly on this.
Do you know, one year, I think it was 2 years ago, in the middle of, I think it was the Sunday, and it was very crowded out in the ground, mm-hmm. and people were having, it started to pour rain and nobody moved. They just kept going on looking at books. So anyway, rain or shine.
It will be happening cover to cover. It will likely be there.
Yes.
We have a wonderful place where you can buy things. You can visit our indie bookstores that are there with their displays, and it's just so fun.
And thank you for that. Give us another recommendation.
All right. So let's talk about T.J. Clune and his new book that comes out next week. So this is called We Burned So Bright. Now, this is a shorter novel. It is less than 200 pages, but it packs a very big emotional punch. The world is ending, and it is ending in 3 weeks because there's a black hole that is coming towards the earth. And nobody's going to save it. It's not that kind of book. It is, the world is actually going to end. And there is a married couple, Donald and Rodney, and they are in their 70s. And there is something that they have to do before everything ends. So they have an RV. They pack it up with enough food to get through the month. And then they start driving. And we don't know what they're doing until later in the book, but it has to do with their son. And so as they're on their journey, they run into various people that are in different stages of grief or denial or acceptance. And some of it is very joyful. Some of it is very dark. So this T.J. Clune book is not as warm and fuzzy as The House in the Cerulean Sea, but it still has those characters that his books just, they touch a raw nerve of emotion in me. And I fall in love with these characters. I grieve for them. And I definitely grieve for Donald and Rodney. So we also kind of see what's happening with the natural world as we're getting closer to the end. You know, rocks and tears start floating away. And gravity is lessening. And it's very interesting. So they meet a woman towards the end who helps them with something. And the only thing that she wants in return is to come and see something. She wants someone else to lay eyes on this so she knows she's not crazy. So what they see in the woods is one of my favorite moments in the book. It is really beautiful and interesting. So Rodney and Donald have pretty much made peace with what's happening. They are laser focused on finishing this task, even when the moon starts to break apart. And I'll just leave that there.
This author, you said, his appearance in Westerville sold out.
I mean, so
there's a reason his books are popular.
He's very popular. He writes a lot of, a lot of wonderful queer characters, and some of it is cozy fantasy, and some of this, you know, like this one is a little more darker, a little more introspective. But all of his books are just wonderful. And every time I read one, I think, oh, this is now my new favorite, because they're all terrific.
And it's a quick pick.
It is a quick pick. It will be out Tuesday, so you won't see it today.
Okay, big waiting list as far as you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Not like yesteryear, but there is a waiting list.
There's a waiting list. Okay. Brian Lohr, what do you have for us from cover to cover of Books for Kids?
Yeah, so we're really excited. This Tuesday, April 28th, we're going to be hosting Philip Stead, who is an award-winning author and illustrator. He's probably best known for his picture book, A Sick Day for Amos McGee. But this is his first middle grade novel, meaning in this case, basically geared towards ages 10 and up. And kind of talking about like funny things going on in books and whatnot, like Cassie was mentioning earlier. This one does have a bit of Monty Python to it. It also has, I would say, a little bit of Princess Diary to it as well. It starts at the very beginning at chapter 13. It's quirky. It's humor. It's full of humor. And you're following this character, Bernadette. The author is a character in this story, and it just has these wonderful illustrations, these spot illustrations all throughout the book done by Philip. You're actually introduced to a number of the characters at the beginning, some friendly, some not so friendly, but it just has a wonderful feel to it. And so again, that is A Potion, A Powder, A Little Bit of Magic, or Like Lightning in an Umbrella Storm. By Philip Stead, and that's geared towards 10 and up. And we'll be hosting him again on Tuesday evening.
And give us one more.
Yes. Talking about the Columbus Book Festival, one of the featured authors is Natalie Richards. She writes a teen thriller and horror. This one in particular is where she has written Two Perfect Lies. It's basically geared towards ages 14 and up, and you have two friends, and one is very popular, one is not so popular. Maybe the unpopular friend is using the other popular friend, but then you find out maybe the popular friend is using the unpopular friend for a murder. So it's quite the thriller, and it starts off on page one where you're right into the thick of things all the way through the end, and it's just a marvelous, fantastic fast read. And so again, that's Two Perfect Lies by Natalie D. Richards.
Thank you, Brian Lohr, from Cover to Cover for those recommendations. Cassie Rose, if we can contain ourselves. Now, we've already had Vikings with names we can't say on the air, and yes. The Abbot, who sounds like he's wild. What do you have for us now?
I think I'm going to recommend and talk a little bit about Tom Perrotta's new book coming out on Tuesday. It's called Ghost Town. And to set it up with a story, it's about a man. It starts out with a man named Jay Perini, and he's a successful author living in California. And he gets a letter from the mayor of his hometown in New Jersey that says, "Would you come to town because we are dedicating a new building, municipal building, to your father?" And the premise, this sets up the premise that he has never been back to his hometown. In fact, he left, never went back, and is one of those things that he tucked in a box and put it under his bed, forgot all about it. So the book is about what happened, which is a summer of when he was 13 years old. And pretty quickly, he takes us to the place, Mr. Perrotta takes us to the place of the boy loses his mother. at the age of 13. So that happens on page 9. But one of the things in the very beginning that he talks a little bit about is the normal family. And this is in the 1970s. You lived in the neighborhood, the normal family, you all watched the same TV shows, you ate the same tuna noodle casserole. Your dad worked, your mom stayed at home. You looked out the front door and everybody looked like you. So in a sense, what happens is that here is Jimmy Perini, who is in his baseball game for the Little League, and he's out there in the field and he sees his cousin show up. And his cousin, he knows immediately what this means, and that is his mother, who's been sick for a long time, has died. So here in front of everyone, he walks off the field. And so the thing about Tom Parada is that he is very subtle in the kind of a deep meaning that can be there, which is this: now the normal is no longer going to apply. But then he doesn't go down and develop that a lot. It's just that you realize that, you know, that household has changed. And indeed it does, because the father works all the time and his sister goes out with her friends. And now little Jimmy is just sort of out on his own. And I'll just say one more thing, or bring up one more scene, and that is at the wake. He leaves the funeral home because he just goes out the front door. He can't take it anymore. And this guy named Eddie rolls up in a Chevy Vega and says, "Hop in." And what, in retrospect, of who now is Jay Perini, is looking back, he said, "I wonder what would have happened if I had not gotten in the car." So much of the summer we follow this little boy, and we find out what it is that happened that caused him to just shut down and never go back.
That, you know what, I've been reading some of Tom Parada's, because he's coming to town, and I want to mention that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But one thing that really impresses me, or I noticed, is he's totally authentic, even if he's writing something that I didn't live or didn't know about. I mean, it makes total sense all the time.
Yes, it does.
His ear is terrific, I thought.
It is. It's authentic. It feels very genuine to whether it's the neighborhood he's writing and the people in the neighborhood, or if it's a cultural time. I mean, that's all so very fun, because he does bring in the cultural items that ring true for you. And if you're in your 60s, 70s, 80s, and you're reading this book that is in the 1970s, you know, you're going to recognize Eat a Peach that is on the tape deck of Eddie's car. And
tape deck, yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah. I mean, and that is, to your point, Christopher, yes, he is very authentic and tuned in.
Now, you are hosting, he's coming to town. Talk about that.
He is coming to town. He's coming to town May 7th. It's an event that is hosted by Gramercy Books. So you can go to their website to check out the event and certainly come. And I'm going to be in conversation with him. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Yeah. To talk about Ghost Town, and also for him, you know, what it is like to be the author of many best-selling books.
Yeah, he's a little bit like Wally Lamb. He does turn them out. I mean, and it gets a lot of attention, and he has a very devoted following, again, because I think he's so authentic. What else do you have for us to recommend?
A book called Break Room by Mai Lee. And this is also kind of it's a light book, but it also has deep meaning in it. It takes place on a TV reality show in a break room. And the setup is the contestants have their rooms where they still work at their jobs, and the break room down the hall, which is being filmed, is where they gather. And they are competing to find out who the mole is that the production team has planted. But what really is going on, and the author sets it up very well, is that the idea is about the villains who are simmering beneath the very calm office atmosphere. And what also is going on, and from the very beginning, is the contestants are very startled to find out how they got on the show. They think that they were just selected, they're going to become famous, when it turns out the fact that their office mates voted them on the show because they are disliked. And so the narrator is very likable, and he is very sensitive, and very smart in the way he takes us through this 1 week production. And of course, they're all in the break room doing horrible things. They only have 100 minutes a day that they can be in it, but trying to figure out who the mole is. But meanwhile, there's that concept that the narrator is very attuned to of, why did I get on the show? Why is it that I am disliked by my office mates? And ultimately, I think that what the author is trying to say is that we aren't taking the time to understand someone. We may dislike them for this small thing. And for the narrator, it's because he puts coffee and cola in the ice cube trays in the break room in his office. And for some reason, they all don't dislike him, but they don't know why he does it. So there's that, maybe we should stop for a moment and find out who the person is.
Just review the title and author again one more time.
It's called Break Room, and it's by Mai Lee, L-E-E-E.
Recommendation from Cassie Rose, who is WOSC's book critic, and her blog is thelongestchapter.com. This is All Sides Weekend, the book show. I'm Christopher Purdy. You're listening to 89.7 NPR News. And how about another quick pick from Chris Hickey?
All right, let's talk about Japanese Gothic. This is by Kylie Lee Baker, and she has written the Keeper of the Night duology. So this is a Gothic dual timeline novel of ghosts, hauntings, and redemption. So this horror novel weaves Japanese mythology through this. So we have two people living in two different centuries, and they find a portal between their time periods in a house. So we are in Japan 2026 and Japan 1877. So in 2026, there's a man named Lee, and he doesn't have any memory of what happened when his college roommate is killed. So he leaves New York and he goes back to his father's house in Japan. And this house is hidden by these giant ferns known as sword ferns, and they look like what you would think they would look like. But there's something off about this house. Animals won't go anywhere near it, and the bedroom window isn't always a window. And at night, he will see a woman in the yard brandishing a sword. So in 1877, there's a woman named Sen, and she is an exiled samurai. And she is hiding from the imperial soldiers in a house hidden by sword ferns. Sound familiar? This next part is going to sound weird. So her father is not her father, and that causes her to do terrible things. When you read the book, that will make sense. I know that sounds strange. And at night, she sees a man in the window. So Sen and Lee, one of them is a ghost, and one of their stories is a lie. The horror writing is really great in this one. If you think like a haunted Japanese house and what the shadows would look like on paper walls, the writing is just is beautiful and excellent. Lots of generational trauma in both storylines. And she weaves a Japanese folktale called Urashima Taro, and that is very similar to Rip Van Winkle. But this, you're going to get gorgeous writing, and you're going to get some very chilling imagery.
That's a quick pick from the Columbus Library.
Yes.
Recommended by Chris Hickey. We are going to take one more break and come back. This is All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show. We are back. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is The Book Show. We come to you once a month to talk about all things book with Cassie Rose, WOC's book critic, with Brian Lohr, who was the owner of Cover to Cover, and with Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library. I'm asking Brian, because he brought us this good news on the cards, to just go ahead and remind us of the Columbus Indie Bookstore Crawl.
Yes, that's going to be 20 different indie bookstores here in the Central Ohio area over April 25th through the 26th. That's Saturday and Sunday. go to any 7 stores, get your crawl card stamped, and then turn it in at the last store. Hopefully you'll visit all 20. We have 2 days. And then get some literary prizes. If you want to know more information about it, you can visit covertocoverchildrensbooks.com or any of the websites of the indie bookstores that are listed.
And they will get you a card and get you a little map, and you'll be on your way.
That's right.
And remind us again, Chris Hickey, of the Book Festival in July.
Book Festival will be July 11th and 12th, and you can get information through the library's social media, but the Columbus Book Festival also has its own social media, and you'll be able to see all the details there, including our fabulous headliners that were just announced.
And Cassie Rose, remind us about your evening with Tom Perata.
It is May 7th, and it is being hosted by Gramercy Books, so you can find that on their website. And the event is held at the Drexel Theater on Main Street.
So we have a very busy panel here on All Sides Weekend here on the Book Show, and I'm going to ask Brian Lohr to give us another, because you bring in the most beautiful books to look at. Unfortunately, if you're radio challenged, you don't get to see them. So I'd love to hear more about what you've got there.
Yeah, so I have a really special one written by a very special local author. Her name is Edie Patu, and it's illustrated by Tricia Tusa. The book is called Mrs. Spitzer's Garden, and it's celebrating its 25th anniversary this May 14th. So we're going to have a special window dedicated to it at our shop. But it's just such a beautiful book, both illustrated and written. It's all about a teacher who grows a garden, and you can a priori understand the metaphor as being able to foster children the same way that she grows her garden. There's this beautiful line in there, about 3/4 the way, she knows that different plants need different things and that each plant has its own shape. It's just such a wonderful, beautiful book. It's great as a gift, both for teachers and students. Again, that's Mrs. Spitzer's Garden by Edie Patu, or Edith Patu, officially, illustrated by Tricia Tusa. And this is a picture book that could go to anyone that's ages 3 and up.
And give us one more, because I'm a little older than 3, so.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I always like to bring in a little bit of nonfiction. And because of Artemis 2 and all the excitement about space, there is a fairly new book. It's out this year by Stacey McNulty and illustrated by Stevie Lewis. It's called Venus, Fierce and Fabulous. And it has all sorts of different... It's actually part of a series. There is one on the moon, if you're interested in the moon, with all the things that have been going on. But this one's the brand new one. And so it gives all these great facts about Venus. We still don't know that much about the planet. We know some, but it just goes through. It has wonderful illustrations, and it has just enough nonfiction text for somebody who is probably around 5 to enjoy it all the way up to 95. So again, that one is Venus, Fierce and Fabulous by Stacey McNulty.
Recommendations from Brian Lohr, who is the owner of Cover to Cover Books for Kids in Upper Arlington. Okay, what is the book witch?
Okay, so this is not a quick pick, but it is a book that I absolutely love and just want to rave about. So Meg Schaefer, she writes cozy fantasy, and she wrote the book The Lost Story, which
Hold
I raved about.
Go back a little bit, because you mentioned that before, and I just
that
want
was
you
the Narnia inspired.
I want you
book.
To elaborate cozy fantasy.
Yes, so it's kind of everything's going to be okay.
Okay.
It's not your dark. They're not violent, and there's going to be a nice ending.
But the point is that everything's
going to
be
okay.
Okay, at
so
the end, so you can trust
cozy,
that.
It's cozy. It's not.
Yes.
It's just they're sweet. Mm-hmm. So this is called The Book Witch, and I heard her speak a few weeks ago, and she shared that this book is for anyone who wishes their book boyfriend was real, and I thought that was very sweet. So this is about a woman. Her name is Rainey March, and she is a book witch, and what that means is she enters books to fight back against the book burners. Now, these magical people, they not only destroy the copy that they are in, but they will say if they destroy the book, then like The Great Gatsby, no one will have ever heard of it. It doesn't exist at all. So what they're doing is even more sinister. So she has a magical black umbrella, and she uses that to hop into the books. And so the umbrella becomes a little dot. So it's a period or it's an I, and that's how she makes her way through the book. And she sets things to write. Now, she has there are rules to her. She cannot fall in love with any of the characters. But then her favorite series is called The Duke of Chicago, and he is a private investigator in the 1930s, and he's dashing and he's handsome, and that rule is broken. But she, there's a mystery that she needs to solve, and he assists her, and she has a cat named Koshka, which is Russian for cat. And the cat doesn't speak, but the cat can read, so the cat can go to and find things. It's a love story to books. All of her books, she says she writes books about books.
Yeah.
So you go into books, and they're inspired by beautiful things. And so you're going to go into places that you love. She hates Wonderland for reasons we can all understand. There is a moment where Elizabeth Bennet from Pride and Prejudice escapes her book. And she escapes it because a college student is reading it, and she loves her so much that she comes out of the book. And Elizabeth is delighted to know that women can go to college.
And that there is college, yes.
Yes, and there is, and she you know, takes her back, wipes her memory, but has this beautiful moment with Elizabeth Bennet. There is a moment where she can't enter a particular book, and it is part of the mystery that she's trying to solve. So she has to find another way to get into this book. So who has an enormous library? Well, Jay Gatsby does. So they enter the Great Gatsby and go to one of his parties where everyone is distracted, and they find the book they're looking for on his shelf and enter that way. It is just a very sweet book. There are several twists that happen that I maybe some other people will see them coming. I did not, and I was just delighted. I cried during this book. It was just a very lovely, beautiful book, and I highly recommend it if you want to just escape and
The Book Witch.
Fall in love with these characters. The Book Witch by Meg Schaefer.
I was thinking of a book, Cassie Rose, you recommended a couple of years ago that I loved, and I loved it so much I can't remember the title, about the mouse who lived in the bookstore.
Oh, and Furman.
Furman, and ate the books. And became, yes.
Yes. It's
and
in
became,
Boston.
Yes, it became in Boston. Mm-hmm. Furman. That was a wonderful book. Yes, that's another great one.
Little, yes.
It's a book about books and eating them. Literally. Yes.
Yes, right.
We're on All Sides Week at the Book Show. So why don't you give us another recommendation, Cassie Rose?
This book is called The Deserters. It's by Matthias Einhard, and it's been shortlisted for several awards. And it's very interesting in that there are two storylines that go in this book. And one of them opens with a man who has left the army. It's an unnamed war going on. And he is finding his way back to a cottage that his parents have owned or his family has owned, where he believes he can hide. Because he knows if he's found by the enemy, they will kill him. If he's found by his own people, they will hang him. So he finds his way there. And while he is there, a woman walks by with a donkey, and she looks at him, and she knows that he knows that she recognizes him. So he has to, to stop her from where she's going, and he keeps her in the cottage. But he has a dilemma now because he feels that he needs to kill her, but he doesn't want to. And I will give a spoiler. He doesn't, so that you don't get traumatized by that. But and that's part of the story, is how the two of them resolve their relationship, but also how it has to do with in war, both of them walking away from it because she has been tormented in her village. And it's a good story in terms of their relationship, and also, the donkey she has is very sweet. Although this is more of a serious story, but the donkey does figure into it. Anyway, I'm digressing in a way that I need not to digress.
Donkeys and ponies.
Right, exactly.
I know there's something, drawn and quartered by ponies, and now we have a sweet donkey that is, helping, people traumatized by war. Anyway, I'm going to move on to the second plot line in this story, which is completely different, and it takes place in Berlin. There's a conference. It is celebrating a mathematician, and it is more through the eyes of the daughter, Irina. She's looking back from about our present time, and this is about 2001. We follow the life of the mathematician who is a communist and who was brilliant in coming up with some kind of formula with prime numbers. But he goes through World War II. His daughter finds out about him being in Buchenwald, how he taught math to prisoners in Buchenwald, why he and his mother didn't marry, what she finds out when he lives in East Berlin, you know, as a communist, and also what she finds out about the mother, who was followed by the secret police, whatever. And it's a very fragmented kind of story, but it does come together. In the beginning, I was thinking, oh, this isn't going to go anywhere, and it does, and I was fascinated by it. So it's, if you are looking for that kind of story where you delve into these very, intriguing, but also very character-driven stories that is in a book that is not that many pages. I mean, I think it's about in the 200s or something, about 200 pages. I think that kind of fascinates you in a way by what the author is doing. It's very clear in the first one who the deserter is, but you don't really know in the second one. Is it her mother who deserted really the father, or is it her father who became disenchanted with communism and deserted his beliefs?
That's a recommendation from Cassie Rose. The title, and also one more time.
It's called The Deserters, and it's by Matthias Einhard.
And we will have on the WOSU website and various websites, thanks to Chris Hickey, who keeps track of all the books we're talking about. So if you're like me and you keep having to ask and you're sitting here, can you give me the title and the author again? It's done for you. And thank you, Chris Hickey, for that.
You're welcome.
This is The Book Show. We have about 6 minutes left, so I want to make sure everybody gets one last chance to give a recommendation. So Brian Lord, cover to cover, we want to keep the kids reading, as you do.
Absolutely. And this one's a great one. It's called A Fish Boy Named Sashimi, and it's by Dan Santat. He won the Caldecott a number of years ago for a book called Beagle. That's a picture book. But this one's more of a graphic novel, and it's geared towards those ages 8 and up. So if you have a kiddo that loves reading graphic novels, say it be a Dave Pilkey Dogman or whatnot, this is going to hit that sweet spot. But a little bit different than somebody like Dave Pilkey, what Dan Santat does in all of his books is he lends some real heart and pulls at your heartstrings a little bit, in the sense of, for example, on the back it reads, "In the town of Barnacle Bay, a creature lurks. He comes from the ocean in search of others like him. He is a fish boy named Sashimi." So here is this idea of a belonging, which is so important at that age. Of course, many times that comes through in more older reads, such as for young adult. But it really is just a lovely read, in the sense of having the humor, but also then that deeper emotional bent to it as well. Again, that's A Fish Boy Named Sashimi by Dan Santat for ages 8 and up.
Recommendation from Brian Lohr, cover to cover, book for kids in Upper Arlington. Thank you, Brian Lohr. Okay, you have a magenta covered, I think.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Called by Maria Semple, Go Gentle. Chris Hickey, go.
Yes, so she is the author of Where'd You Go, Bernadette? So this is a highly anticipated follow-up novel. And Maria writes about where she is in life. She's inspired by that. So she writes about a woman named Adora. She's in her 50s, and she is a philosophy tutor for a set of very wealthy twins in the Upper West Side. Yeah. So this, she practices Stoicism, which she explains roughly as the key to happiness is not wanting anything other than to live virtuously. So this story is about what happens when there's something that Adora very much wants and her struggle with that. And she thinks, Maria Semple says, what is the worst position I could put her in? And does that. And there's a little bit of a Sex and the City vibe with this, because she has her friends and that she refers to them as the coven. So this is going to be a good read. You're going to learn a lot about Stoicism.
Leave it at that, at the coven. That's great. But that's Maria Semple is the author.
Yes.
It's called Go Gentle. It's a quick pick from the Columbus Library. Cassie Rose, give me one more real quick one.
book that is published by New York Review of Books, which we talk about that publisher here. We like their books. This is not a classic. This is a new book. It's nonfiction, and it is called Transcendence for Beginners by Claire Carlisle. I will tell you that I have written about it on the blog. It's the current one that is up, so if you want some more information about it, you can see it there. But essentially, she, the author is a biographer, and she's also, though, a history professor of philosophy at King's College London. And she combines the two professions about writing about a life in a linear fashion as a biographer, but understanding as a philosopher about how the many diffusions that a life has.
And the blog is thelongestchapter.com, and that is the show. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend Books, the book show. Look on our social media for the books discussed today. Chris Hickey, thank you very much. From the Youth Services Manager, Whetstone Library, Brian Lohr from Cover to Cover, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Thank you, Marcus Charleston, our producer. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making us do radio. And thank you all for listening. This is 89.7 NPR News.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.